RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums
and Beans. That one didn't make me laugh this week.
I know. I couldn't think of anything.
So vanilla.
If I think about it the night before, I'll be fine. But I always forget that I've started a little tradition here. And when I show up, I said, oh, damn it.
You know, I don't understand why people say like vanilla as though it's a bad thing. I like vanilla.
Well, yeah, it's okay to like, you know, plain, smooth, easy going, really not too in your face and loud things. That's it. It's just a.
Are you saying that the color white is?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that vanilla is white. Vanilla is more like off-white. It's like it's got a yellowish. There's a yellow tinge to it.
You're right, actually. And everybody's vanilla is different too. Like if you go to Dairy Queen, it's like white as pure as snow.
Yeah.
But like any of the like self, you know, the home, if they exist anymore, those home ice cream parlors, their vanilla tends to be different. And some people say vanilla.
Yes. You know what? And I think, I don't know why, but I think that I have used both in my life.
Vanilla.
I think vanilla.
I guess it depends on where you live. Have you ever done one of those like accent quizzes?
I have.
Where does it say? New York or Northeast or what?
I've never gone out. I've never had a result that was surprising. But, you know, that's when they ask you things to say like orange or.
Yeah, orange.
Orange. I know people from upstate New York say bagel instead of bagel.
Yeah, they do. And pop instead of soda.
Yeah, I want some pop. No, you don't. You want soda.
Yeah, it's weird.
But then again, depending on what parts of New York, it's not only soda, it's soder.
Soder.
My grandmother used to say soder.
One of the things that I always got in trouble for down here when I first got here in the South was that okay. You keep your boxers in this receptacle that is in a dresser. What do you call it?
Keep what? A box?
No, like your boxers, your socks, you keep them in your.
I keep it in the drawer.
Okay. So you say it right. You say drawer. I have a hard time with that. I say draw.
No, I don't really accentuate the drawer a lot, but it's never a pure draw, D-R-A-W. It's never just a pure draw. It's draw or it's the dresser or something like that.
Yeah, I used to get raked over the coals for saying draw. Like, go in that drawer over there and get me, you know, whatever. And they'd be like, The what?
Yeah. No, I would never mistaken what you were asking me for if you said that. No, like that way. Yeah.
Yeah. They had no idea at first what I was saying. And then I hear, you know, I was a manager, you know, so I hear all these people giggling and I'm looking around at my like, you know, 15 staff and I'm like, what?
No, we would have a problem, Tracy, if you showed up to a spelling bee and you were told to spell draw and you said, okay, draw, D-R-A-W-E-R. You know, and you're like, all right, there's a little bit of a disparity here. You're not saying it right.
No, I know. Hey, listen.
Pronunciation B.
You know, I that's one thing where I think that everybody out there has their own pet peeves with me and their qualms, because I was doing a live stream the other day about, you know, the breaking information that we were getting about Carlin being under investigation, and I'm explaining everything and they're like, will you stop pronouncing it that way? And they're typing out the correct pronunciation for like various names. And I'm like, oh, and you guys understand this. Okay. It bothers me that I do that. I try so hard to get things right. Like, I know it frustrates people to hear people pronounce words incorrectly. It's frustrating. And I just want to let everyone know, I do make a very conscious effort. Like, why don't you go ahead and tell the audience how you say nuclear?
I have trained myself. I have had to go through intensive training over the last year and a half to start building the habit of saying nuclear. N-E-W hyphen C-L-E-A-R. That's what I say. That's what I see in my head every time I have to. I know that the word's coming up. Nuclear. That's it. Because, of course, I'm sure that it still slips out. But I pull the George W. Bush all the time. And I say nuclear, you know, and people come down on me. But then, you know, Tracy, when you are speaking day after day and people tune into you speaking and they just get to know you and it becomes more regular, they then start realizing, you know, picking up things that at first, you know, they didn't hear. And I mean, everybody starts getting ticked off by everything, even if they like you. They're like,
I know.
Can't stand when they do that.
I know. Because it's like you get to know the person like really well, you know, so.
Well, here's a problem for me. You and I, we talk, we have, you know, we have our accents, we have our roots, and we have our, you know, pitfalls and all that as far as how we present things. I'm sure people pick things out that they don't like. But there's other things that are completely controllable. For example, I have been a fan of Michael Savage and his show for years now. And Matt introduced it to me maybe about 4 years ago or so. And I really just – at one point, Michael Savage could do no wrong. And then it started becoming – certain things just started becoming too much. The worst sin that any radio or speaking or speaker could ever do is eat or drink on the air. And Michael Savage is such a prolific snacker on air, and he brags about what he said. I'm eating cheap Chinese food, and he's taking calls, and you can hear him shoveling things into his mouth, and he's speaking through a mouthful of rice and this and that, and it's awful to listen to. He got dropped from a couple of stations in 2019. He warned us that his syndication and his network size was going to be shrinking in 2019. So what he did was, he said, and he announced that he was going to start doing podcasting as a supplement for all those markets that were going to be without his show. I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be interesting. He's going to do a less than an hour long podcast maybe every day to tell a story or get a little bit more concentrating on a subject. It'll be produced. It'll be pre-recorded. And they'll put out something nice and I won't have to deal with eating. Wouldn't you know, last night I'm driving back home from a buddy's house after the show. And I drop off Anthony, I drop off Mike, and now I'm going home. And I'm listening to Michael Savage, and he's doing a little thing about toxic masculinity. And he, as he's talking about hysteria, and he's tying in toxic masculinity with the hysteria of the Salem witch trials, all of a sudden I realize that even then, he's eating. He's shoveling. He's eating. It's a pre-record. You couldn't not eat for the hour that you sat down to pre-record this episode? I can't believe it. I understand 3 hours of radio in the middle of the day, maybe in a commercial break. And when you're on terrestrial radio, you have 15-minute commercial breaks. You can't have a couple of forkfuls of rice and have your mouth completely cleared of food by the time you come back? Oh, my God, the eating on that people do when they're supposed to be professional speakers is completely irresponsible. So I don't care how the way you say draw. Oh, you son of a bitch. Oh, God, that was awful.
I'm like, he's going to settle down in a second, and I'm going to have my bottle of water right here ready for him as soon as he does. We've got news, Frank. We've got news.
Let's go for it.
Listen, last week we didn't talk at all about... We didn't talk at all about the New York Times article, and you did a really, you know, really good job of explaining this on your show about like what it meant. And I know that people have heard about this New York Times article from lots of different people, but I think that you had a unique perspective about the severity of what it actually meant. So I would like for you to take it away and tell people.
Well, there's one paragraph. I don't remember the paragraph, but there is one paragraph in that article that lays out three reasons, or maybe two reasons, and the other one is just that they were upset that the president used his, you know, legal privilege of being able to fire whoever he wants that serves at his pleasure in the executive branch. So we can already see that there was a revenge kind of an element to it. But when you read that the New York Times and their traditional form of reporting that is completely based on anonymous sources are coming out and telling people that they did not like the foreign policy that the president spoke very plainly and publicly about. They didn't like his foreign policy. They thought it was too pro-Russia. Because of, you know, what he was talking about, you know, in his stance in Ukraine and all that stuff, even though the prior administration running from the Ukraine crisis, running from his own red line in Syria, how much more pro-Russia could that have been? And of course, the whole Dmitry Medvedev hot mic moment that he had leading up to the 2012 reelection bid for Obama. How can that be interpreted any other way than pro-Russia, especially when the hot mic was about, hey, give me some time so I have flexibility on an issue as sensitive as missile defense.
I know.
We're talking missile defense over here. Whether you want the missiles there or not, can we all agree it's a sensitive issue? And he's saying, give me some leeway before I can really act.
Well, and he presumed that he would be reelected.
Exactly. Exactly. So you're thinking about this. They're talking about they don't like his foreign policy. They don't like the fact that he uses his totally legitimate and legal powers to get rid of an acting FBI director. What was the other one, Tracy? There was and of course, yes. This was for a long time the damning evidence, the smoking gun, the public joke.
Yes.
The joke that Trump made in front of an entire pool of reporters out in public, in front of cameras that were going to be putting the news all over the world, that he told in a joking way, hey, Russia, if you're out there and you find the 33,000 emails that Hillary deleted, the real obstruction of justice in the last couple of years, that would be great. A joke. That was a smoking gun. They come out and they use all of these excuses and they publish this in the New York Times to say this was the reason why the FBI felt like some kind of a patriotic duty to not ignore this and look deeper into Trump and his dealings on a grand stage in a foreign sense. For anybody to think that those are going to help the New York Times and the FBI's credibility in any way, shape or form, they must be freaking out about something that's coming down the pike, because if that was the one and only card they had to play, yep, it is awful.
Yeah, I mean, even Lawfare Blog, which is like a leftist rag in a way. I said this on when I called in from live on the street the other day on your show. Like, even they wrote an article saying if this is what they were using to open a counterintelligence investigation against a sitting president, we've got some serious issues. Like, it's even they're saying it's horrible. And, you know, here's the thing. Like, this is separate from Crossfire Herc. This is after he's president already. It's insane. Now, listen, I'm going to be honest. I've been working really hard over the past couple days. I still am trying to get this story straight inside of my head to be able to then explain it to other people. Like, all the intricacies of what we've learned over the past couple of days in the Lisa Page testimony, the Bruce Orr testimony, the Papadopoulos testimony, all of which was leaked to the Epoch Times, which I've got to be honest, like, is really, really telling. And let me say that they employ some of the best, you know, independent researchers that we have on our side in terms of like normal people who were doing this, you know, out of a duty to the country, who aren't necessarily hired by any mainstream publication. So Brian is hired by them. Jeff at the Markets works for them. And, you know, I've known Jeff for a really long time. We toss ideas off one another. So for me to see him get a story like that was really awesome, because it means that they're recognizing the power that people like you and me and other people have to get a message across, and they're bypassing those other traditional outlets to do it.
Well, hey, you know, it's really easy to create legitimacy in alternative forms of media. All you need to do is get somebody with some integrity, and there's plenty of people out there with integrity. I mean, think about it. Where would you most likely find people of integrity were willing to go out there and do real dirty work. It's why for a small part in my life before I lost all the time to actually enjoy sports and like I used to. I used to really tip my cap to college sports. These are people who are that are playing their asses off, because they know that they haven't reached the top yet. And if they can just put everything they got into something and do something well, then maybe they can reach the top. I trust independent journalists who are not tied or attached to the hip to these big networks more than anything these days. And it does not take much to give them legitimacy, enough legitimacy that can cut down any big network at the knees. And that's just simply report something that has a lot of truth to it and actually comes out being verifiable. And people like Brian and Jeff, they've been on fire lately, and a lot of legitimacy and a lot of validity to what they've been saying. Now, I don't know why anybody's reading anything else but publications like this. And on the whole law blog that you were talking about, it's not only just other left-leaning outlets that are scratching their head and saying, wait, something's not right here. It's people, regular people in the comment sections. You can see their cognitive dissonance is kicking in. You can see it. I saw one person, of course, they didn't respond back to me, saying, wait a second. They're trying to play off the timelines of John Brennan and the FBI and the genesis of this whole thing, where we're talking about Papadopoulos, we're talking about London, but now we're talking about this and that, and they're coming out, and it looks more and more like this is going to be a completely underwhelming report by Mueller. And so what on earth? They're starting to realize that there's really nothing here. And hey, according to Lisa Page and Peter Strzok's own text messages, there's no there. So, I mean, this is the real watershed point. But then again, we're not going to see any apologizing out of people.
No, of course not. I think they're just trying to cover their butts at this point. Like, the media as a whole has been championing this nonsense story to try and cover the butts of their analysts they've brought on board and the CIA agents embedded inside their production crews and, all of the nonsense that's gone on. They're trying to cover their butts by publishing these excuses, and people just are not going to buy it. I'm sorry. There's too much evidence to the contrary. And there's a willing bunch of people that want to get that evidence out to the America, including the president of the United States. So we're getting these like leaks, for lack of a better word. And people have taken issue with the transcripts being, quote, leaked. I have to say again, these were unclassified hearings, okay? So it's not like anything in there was classified information or anything like that. It was all things that the public could hear. They were just closed door because they didn't want the conspirators to hear each other's stories. Case in point, Lisa Page contradicting Bruce Orr about the dates when she had the dossier. If Lisa Page would have been privy or vice versa, that might not have come out. And we know now that there's an issue with the timeline that Lisa Page is putting forth. So if those documents have been now leaked to certain outlets so that they can give an unbiased view of what's going on there with factual information, knowing these journalists have a track record for telling the truth and caring only about the facts, then so be it. We're going to get them too. And the only reason, in my opinion, why we're not getting them right now is because of the shutdown. So they needed on the timeline to get this information out as soon as possible. And the reason why we're not getting them publicly is because of the shutdown. That's my thought. So in order to keep things moving, they're releasing this stuff, because I can tell you right now, after I have no information whatsoever to tell me this is actually true, but I'm feeling that this FISA application, OIG investigation report is coming out soon. And I think that as soon as that comes out, we're going to get the declassification. And I think that once we get that declassification, the whole shebang is going to start to fall apart and people are going to start going to jail. There's one more thing. There was a letter written to a U.S. attorney in Connecticut who was doing the leak investigation that was dated January 15th from Jordan. It stemmed out of Carlin's testimony in front of the House, which was months ago. Why did he wait to put that letter out? What was the trigger for him to be safe, to be able to expose safely that there, that investigation is going on?
I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm still trying to pinpoint what it could be, but I think that we're getting closer. And I, you know, people say, I'll believe it when I see it. I'm getting so, I understand that perspective. But I said this morning, we'll get into this Michael Cohen propaganda, try to steal the narrative back issue. We have not heard a peep out of any of these ongoing investigations. The leak from the McCabe grand jury went to the Washington Post. Who do you think that leaked that? Do you think it was the people doing the investigation? Or do you think that it was, you know, somebody wanting people to know there was an investigation so they could prepare themselves?
The latter.
Exactly. So we don't get leaks out of investigations that are moving along successfully. We just don't. And we're getting all of these leaks from these anonymous sources who are supposedly investigators who have all this information. Now, Michael Cohen's taken the forefront again, little rat Cohen.
Well, you know, let me just say one other thing, because I know what I like to try to keep myself grounded, because, you know, I didn't study political science. I am not a journalist. I don't have any intention of being one. It's just after a while I start taking an interest in the topic, and the stories are really fascinating and they have a lot of impact on our personal lives. What I would say here, because you were saying before, Tracy, if somebody like you who is in this up to her eyeballs every day is trying to be able to understand what these timelines and these contradictions are saying. For everybody out there, what I would just say is this. I would offer up one little suggestion just to keep your sanity. Remember the basics. The basics take the entire thing down. This whole thing was predicated on lies. It was predicated on the dossier that was a lie. There's nothing in it. It was funded by the same people that these creeps had exonerated just months prior. I mean, the entire thing comes apart at the very foundation of it all. So to look at this and to say, oh man, but what about this? And who said this at what time? And the text messages and this investigation. All I have to say at this point is I don't expect to be in on any arrests. I'm not going to be the one putting the handcuffs on anybody. I'm not going to be deposing people. I'm not going to be the one that's giving closing or opening statements in court. I have to just have faith that hopefully there's somebody out there who knows all the right questions to ask, who has a good comprehensive timeline together, and knows how these prosecutions are going to be brought to the fore when and if they do. Aside from that, it does not take away with what we already know. There is nothing there. It is verifiable, because after 2 years, we would have already known if there was something that implicates the president had stolen an election. So it's just, I would not get so confused and destroy yourself for you at home. And to try to figure out the little ins and outs and nuances, that's where the devil's in the details. Those are the details that the devil's hiding in. And the devil comes in the form of an aneurysm, because you're not going to be able to, you know, you put it all together. Just know the basics here. It's all bullshit and it's bad for you.
It's true. Given that this is my job, it has to click for me before I feel okay and I can rest. And right now it doesn't click. It clicks, but it doesn't. I need more. You know, it's like almost like, it's hard to explain. Like if you do a job where you're doing a puzzle and, you know, you can't find the last piece, it's missing somewhere. And, you know, that's your hobby. And that's what you do all the time is puzzles. And you've got this one you've been working on for 2.5-3 years. And you're almost at the end and you're missing a couple pieces of it. And you don't know where they are. That's how I feel right now.
Well, like I said, that's your job.
And Oh, yeah.
When you put those puzzles together, it makes people like me, we get to then have that, we get to live vicariously through you and have that vicarious aha moment. But I think for the rest of us, where, you know, our everyday lives look a little bit different than yours, it's better to just hold on to the basics and just trust that the professionals know what they're doing.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with the basics. They're really simple, just like you just said. Like, I was listening to Dan Bongino's podcast, which I do every day. And he was explaining the Papadopoulos MIFSA, you know, wire thing. And listen, I interviewed Papadopoulos personally face to face, sitting right in front of him. And I had a few words with him the other day, I'll be honest, because I was furious at him. But anyway.
Really?
I said, how in the hell could you have sat down in front of me and not told me, after we were having a conversation about this $10,000, that the FBI had asked you to wear a wire for $10,000?
The FBI offered him the same amount, and they tried to send him in to go wear a wire to talk to MIFSD.
They didn't say $10,000. That was a misstatement on my part. They offered to pay him to be a confidential informant. And how he could have not included that. What was the purpose of not including that? You know, it's in your testimony. That'll come out anyway. That when he told me so many other things that were new, it infuriated me. Not because I wanted to be the one for him to tell, but because it makes a huge difference.
And just to be clear, they wanted him to wear a wire to go talk to MIFSD.
Yeah, and inside of the transcript, they also said that he was talking to MIFSD, you know, after MIFSD supposedly was gone. He was MIFSD was reaching out to him. That's what it says in his testimony. Remember, it was like MIFSD disappeared. Nobody's heard from him. The FBI can't get him. It's because of you, Papadopoulos.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, we learn that he was communicating with Papadopoulos.
Very interesting.
So anyway, this is what's going on in my head right now. Like, I'm like, okay, what is going on with this guy? How does he really fit in? Because we know from the Orr testimony, that Crossfire Hurricane was not started because of Papadopoulos. It was around the same exact time that Steele met with Page and Strzok and all them in McCabe's office. So they used Papadopoulos as kind of like an excuse, like, oh, this is why Crossfire Hurricane started. Nuh-uh. It started because of the dossier. And then they used Papadopoulos as like a lean on, because they didn't want anybody to know that this nonsense intelligence from some secondhand source who wasn't even in Russia, which we've learned now, too, was the cause for all of this noise, and that Brennan was behind it, and that Brennan and Reed. Does that same name sound familiar from last week's show?
Reed?
Yeah.
As in Harry Reed?
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Remember we were talking about him being so ill and gravely ill, and now all of a sudden he's going to be dragged into this, and isn't that just a shock?
Isn't it just a shock that he's not long for this world?
Yeah, like the rest of them. Anyway. So we're learning that it was Brennan that it appears now. You see how confusing this is? Hey, we're learning that it was maybe Brennan that was started this entire thing, hid it from the FBI. So the FBI didn't even, Paige was emphatic that she had no idea that Brennan had a copy of this dossier before the FBI had it.
Isn't that interesting? Well, it's interesting for Brennan as far as he goes. It's also interesting that I don't know.
What was your question? I really want to know what you're thinking right now. Like, honestly, what were you going to say?
There's conspirators in both agencies, in both the FBI and the CIA. There's conspirators there. There's conspirators everywhere. The DOJ. It just doesn't matter. But what I don't know is. Where did the order originate from? Is it the CIA, John Brennan, and the FBI were willing? Maybe they were politically biased, willing to jump on any. But were they still duped? I mean, you could be politically biased and see this as a legitimate opportunity to bust Trump on legitimate crimes.
Yep,
and then find out. In the meantime, while you're going along for the ride, yes, I do hate Donald Trump. I want him out of office. But this is not a legitimate investigation we're involved in.
And at the same time, keep working that investigation and do everything that you possibly can to make sure that he is tarnished and removed from office so that it never comes out that you were doing it in the first place.
Right. I'm wondering what kind of to what degree, if at all, that might have been going on, because I don't see how you can get so many. I'll bring this up to you. I'll put it this way. I brought this up on my show the other night, too. I have friends that worked at the Pentagon for a long time, and a few of them, they all, even though they, some of them don't even know each other, they all have, they all say the same thing when I bring up conspiracies to them. They tell me, Frank, just from being a government employee for as long as I have been, I will tell you why I am so far inclined to not believing conspiracies of the magnitude that you bring up to me sometimes. And it's because I know how incompetent people inside the government are. And to say that so many people are going to be able to get together and do something that is so such a vast operation without it being known by everybody is near impossible. And whereas, you know, I take that with a grain of salt with some theories and with some situations, with this one, this investigation, the Russia thing, CIA, FBI, DOJ, DIA, everybody.
Five Eyes,
the UK, GCHQ, everybody, no matter what, everything involved, this story as a whole looks exactly like what my friends would describe as being a government kind of conspiracy, where it falls apart so badly because you have so many different egomaniacs that are involved that are trying to do the right thing to keep themselves safe and their friends safe, and it just falls apart so violently that they can't do anything about it. This looks like a telltale sign.
It does.
You know, so
yeah, because that's great the way you said that too, because I don't think everybody did know that was involved at least not at first. And then what it ends up becoming is who has leverage over who? Who has leverage over McCabe? Who has leverage over Clinton? Who has leverage over the law firm? How does Glenn Simpson? There are so many characters involved. There is no way on God's green earth they all knew what everyone else was doing, which is exactly why this happened. I think this came from really, really, really high up and not just inside the U.S. government, okay? Donald Trump represented an existential threat to the world plan. And the United States was 100% complicit in the world plan up until that point. It also it threatened to completely expose Uranium One, the Iran deal, and everything else that was going on in terms of black money and all the nonsense that had gone on before. Hence why they were so worried about Michael Flynn. So and the fact that they've got Weissman and that other guy that was also involved with the dossier, and the same agent that questions General Flynn is the one who's Bruce Orr's handler for Christopher Steele. The whole entire story is you couldn't write it better. You couldn't write something like this. And sometimes
you couldn't write it worse. That's the problem.
I know. And sometimes
if you wrote it well, it would have worked.
Exactly. And, you know, honestly, Frank, sometimes I sit back, especially lately, as I'm, you know, up till all hours of the night trying to get this straight. I sit back and I say, is this really possible that this actually happened? Like, the depth of it is so disgusting and depraved. Like, am I missing something? Is it easily explained away? Is it, I'm trying to play devil's advocate and kind of like, you know, Occam's razor with it, you know? And there's no way, knowing everything we know, the documented facts we have there, and especially what's been coming out lately, like these people got up in front of Congress under oath, noticeably missing Democrats to question them. They just didn't show up.
Yeah.
I mean, and then we know that Schiff lied in the memo, Frank. He lied in the memo. He said that Bruce Orr had nothing to do with any of this. And it was, you know, he lied in his rebuttal memo to Nunez. Just lied, blatantly lied. He knew. And that's why I think this whole trip being canceled yesterday is so much more than what everybody's making it out to be. Why does Schiff and Pelosi have to go overseas to Afghanistan? Why?
I don't know. Looking at this and I say, okay, I like that rats are scurrying, and I like that a plan is being foiled, and I like that the effectiveness. See, I think that even in the beginning, and when people were assessing the hand that they had been dealt with this and how they had to play it, I think that the effectiveness of the hand had expired a long time ago. They knew that if they weren't able to paralyze or destroy this presidency before a certain point, then they are going to be exposed completely, because there's no place to hide. They'd be in an open field naked, and that has the effectiveness of the plan of the it's been long since expired. And now that I'm watching that, I say, okay, well, the rats are scurrying. We'll see how this one starts falling apart in its final phases. But now this is where me, as more of just a pair of eyes that has a little bit more interest in observing the culture, is, you know, just starting to see where people are going from here. And there doesn't seem to be a really great interest in understanding what's going on. There's always seems to be a really great interest in understanding that the people who are working this scheme, they don't like Trump. And I don't like Trump either, and whatever it takes. And that's why it's okay. So the whole Russia thing is whatever. Okay, fine. But what about Cohen? Oh, okay. Well, Cohen's fine. Okay, fine. But what about Stormy? Oh, that's all. Oh, then what about Mar-a-Lago this? Oh, what about the emoluments clause? Oh, okay, that's bullshit too. Oh, okay. Well, then what about they don't care, Tracy.
I know. You know what you didn't do before we get into Cohen, because we're going to go into Cohen now, but you didn't tell me before what the comment read that nobody responded to you on.
Where? What do you mean?
You were talking about the comments underneath, like, articles, and you said that there was a comment from someone starting to realize.
You know what? How about you start on Cohen, and I'm going to go through my Twitter to see if I still have it there. Because after a while, nobody responded. I just deleted the tweet because it was like 2 days and there was no action on it. So I might have just deleted the tweet. But start on that, and I'll look it up, because that will link me back to the original thread.
Okay. As I start going through this Cohen thing, there's two things. Will you be able to concentrate on what I'm saying at the same time?
With Cohen?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yes. No. Yes. Hold on. Just give me.
All right. So I'll just give background of what you know already, so that way you don't have to pay attention. So yeah. Basically, I have a co-host who doesn't listen to anything that I say. And no, you're listening, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, Cohen, there's been two kind of counter narrative attempts over the past couple of days to kind of try to steal. Oh, good. Okay. Go ahead. Before we get started.
Before we get started, I wanted to just jump in. Okay. So this guy, his name is McGregor. Okay. He said he shares New York Times, says investigating Donald Trump, FBI sees no clear link to Russia. All right. So now this was an article from, let me see here. This is from October 31st, 2016. Okay.
Yep.
A couple of days before October 31st, 2016, Halloween. McGregor puts this out on January 12th. This nobody says everybody. Let's all take a deep breath and calm down. We should all remember investigating Donald Trump. FBI sees no clear link to Russia. 2016. Then his second tweet, some commentary. Now, here is the New York Times article that we've been talking about that just came out a couple days ago or last week. Some commentary. This article was pure horseshit when it was published. It was written to obfuscate in the lead up to the election. The fact that this publication can also print this article is stunning.
Oh, so they're realizing that it's not fitting their narrative now.
Exactly. Of course, they can't be wrong. That's the whole thing here. There's no way in hell that they can be wrong about Donald Trump and his foreign meddling. So this is where the cognitive dissonance is coming in. So McGregor, that's his second tweet in that thread. Here is the third, fourth, and fifth tweet. And he says this: it begs the question, what is the play here? If the first article was dishonest on its face, that's the article for 2016 saying there's no link. If the first article was dishonest on its face, what is the purpose of the piece from yesterday? Is there another motive? They must have gotten an okay from the DOJ to print this story, right? He continues, I'm working off of the assumption that they haven't changed their motive to obfuscate. It isn't the same. It isn't the same authors, but it is the same publication. Maybe I'm off the reservation. Yes, you are. Maybe I'm off the reservation. But the Jekyll and Hyde game that the New York Times is playing is curious. Yes, because they're complicit. The entire media is complicit in this hoax. But he continued last tweet. Could the impetus for this article have been a more nefarious purpose? Might it be trying to coax an action out of its intended audience? I don't know, but there's something strange about the behavior of the New York Times. My tweet to him that went unanswered was, "You're only now questioning the behavior of the New York Times?"
Listen, the fact that this person is even discussing the fact that the media could have written something to persuade the public in one way or another and it wasn't true should be enough. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, it is a positive that we're at that phase in the game. But once again, I brought this up to point out the cognitive dissonance. Yes, they are now facing it. They are facing new information straight in the eyes. But still, they cannot give up the idea that Trump's election was illegitimate and it only was delivered by the help of foreign interests. They're just wondering why the New York Times is taking this really weird topsy-turvy path toward an inevitable revelation.
I didn't know that the media was supposed to be running counterintelligence investigations on the people that consume it.
Exactly.
I mean,
and they're only now questioning that the behavior out of these media outlets is odd and out of the ordinary.
I mean, yeah, listen, I mean, that just threw a light bulb off over my head. Like, hello, people. The media is literally running a propaganda, running an intelligence operation on you. Literally.
Have you ever watched the footage from 1975, Operation Mockingbird?
I've never seen it.
Have you? It's short. There's short clips out there, but just to go show the answering and the open committee and what they can't answer and just pretty much the confirmation that our intelligence services had implanted their sources, their people, their willing assets into all major television and print media across the country. And yes, this was in 1975. So if you're out there and you're saying, well, they must have stopped afterwards.
Look,
okay.
They were quiet about it then and they did it without us knowing. Now they just put them on as analysts.
Yeah.
I mean, now they just hire them. They hire them and stick them on television.
Well, you have James Clapper and James Comey. First of all, Comey knows that the dossier is nonsense. He knows the dossier is nonsense. He's still saying it's unverified into 2017. But around the first of the year, right before the inauguration, when you have outgoing President Obama and incoming President-elect Trump, he's briefing both of them on this bullshit dossier just so that James Clapper has a reason to let CNN know that, hey, it's newsworthy now because both presidents have been notified about it. And if it was important enough to notify both presidents, then it should be important enough to at least mention it in the news. And then, of course, now James Clapper is working on these networks.
And then they use that information they leak to the news, not this exact time, to bolster their case for investigation.
Yes.
They use the media as a tool to bolster their own information that they've manufactured in order to allow them to get FISA warrants. Like, you could leak anything to the media. By the way, did you hear that Joe Schmo down the block robbed, you know, XYZ Bank? Here's how he did it. He went in there at 9 o'clock. And meanwhile, it's an intelligence person telling the newspaper that. The newspaper prints it. And then the police detective says, we must investigate Joe Schmo. Let's get a warrant. Let's spy on his phone calls. That's exactly what happened.
Well, hey, this is why I always say, and why I have said this, I just said it about 10 minutes ago, too. When it comes to this situation, the basics are what matter the most. Because after you get past the basics of what did not happen, what was faked, what was an original diversion away from the very embarrassing DNC leak to show that there really was obstruction of justice. There really was the stealing of an election. It was the DNC primaries. There really was, rigging of an election and rigging of debates on television and all that. The diversion that became the backup plan for a president that they did not want, that is the basics, all you need to know. Everything after that point is purely for the managing of public perception.
Yep.
Everything has been a play, a psychological warfare play on us afterwards. Everything afterwards
well,
is.
I agree with you for the most part, but I have to say a lot of it was also an ongoing active coup inside of the intelligence community to try and get President Trump out of office. Mm. And they needed to use public opinion to be able to do that. And it didn't work.
That's what I mean. I mean, that's why
it
had to primarily be a campaign of whispers to be able to destroy him in the public and give some kind of impetus for people to go after him and try to tear apart his presidency. Because if they actually had something to charge him with, we would have already known about it.
He would have been done. He would have been gone.
Exactly. So all they had was public perception.
Just like the other day. Like the other day, I put this on my Twitter because it really, really just infuriated me. Okay. They know that people just typically read headlines and they don't go any further. And the NBC News, which is the biggest rag outside of the New York Times that I've ever read in my entire life, they're horrible. They write, Attorney General nominee Barr, the public may never see Mueller's report. That's the headline, okay? They know that most people didn't listen to the hearings because they don't give a crap or they're busy, right? And then in the first article, in the first paragraph, like not the first, the second of the article, it reads, at his confirmation hearing, Barr repeatedly told the Senate Judiciary Committee that he's committed to making as much information public as he can about Mueller's probe. How does that square with your headline?
It doesn't. It doesn't. Actually, it's wishful thinking, because at this point, I'm pretty sure that the people on the left, they don't want anything to come out at this point. They want the fairy tale to continue.
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, and that ties into Cohen. So we've got all these damaging leaks coming out, you know, not leaks that are like of secret investigations. And somebody said that, you know, Brennan was a spy for Russia. None of that nonsense. Just, hey, here's the closed door hearing testimony that we had. Why don't you guys do a piece on this? Because it's really beneficial to the rest of the story. And we get all that stuff coming out. And of course, we get nary a peep from the media on it. But they know it's out there, because if just my Twitter Twitter impressions are any indication of what's going on out there, they're in big trouble. OK, I'm blown away by the numbers I've been getting over the past 2 weeks. Insane. I'm just blown away. So that means people are primed and ready and paying attention, in my opinion. So they come out with like two little things that could possibly sway public opinion towards Trump is going down, to try and rescue themselves. The first one is that apparently Cohen paid some company to try to sway two online polls. One of them at the head of Drudge Report, and then another one. And that was like a huge deal. Like, oh my God, he's trying to sway the polling data. The story in and of itself is nonsense. We don't even need to go into it. He paid in cash. He had some glove. Who gives a crap? Doesn't matter. I say, Frank, and I'm talking a lot here, but I say the left has the founder of LinkedIn financing complete disinformation campaigns to sway elections. Legitimate elections, swaying public opinion in elections, and CNN is concerned about a non-scientific online poll that wasn't even successful at all?
Let me say, if they're talking about a non-scientific poll from early 2015, when a year later, Donald Trump would be up against the most ridiculous polls I have ever seen in my life. So because allegedly Donald Trump might have had a hand in swaying a couple of polls I have never even fucking seen or heard. Oh my God, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Okay.
Let it fly, Frank.
Okay. Well, either way, I've never seen in my life. What does that mean? Does that mean that those polls were instrumental in overcoming the completely legitimate 98% Hillary wins polls that came out a year later?
Look,
they're completely legitimate, right?
I'm reading someone. I retweeted someone who responded to me and said, who paid for these polls? And this is the day before the presidential election, okay? Princeton, 99% Clinton. HuffPo, 98% Clinton. The Daily Kos, 92%. CNN, 91%. The New York Times, 85%. I mean, come on.
Yeah, who paid for those?
Who paid for those ones? So we had that come out, and that just fell flat on its face, of course, because that's ridiculous. And then today, we get another story, another Cohen story about the Russia, supposed Russia deal for a Trump Tower in Moscow. The Felix Sater angle coming back out again. And the fact that apparently, as per the anonymous sources who told BuzzFeed all this information, that Ivanka and Jared and Donald Trump had, there's all these communications about the details of the Russia deal, and they were really read in on it, and they had all this information, and Trump instructed Cohen to lie to Congress about how important it was.
Can you speculate as to what the importance of having, first of all, this is a man who has properties and golf resorts all over the planet Earth. And just tell me what the quid pro quo would have been to have a Trump Tower in Moscow if become president. What would the quid pro quo would have been? What does this even mean?
I can't think of anything.
You know, I mean, selling the weapons to Ukraine again. Standing firm in Syria. What else? What else? The sanctions and just kicking.
Because Donald Trump's company would never have survived without a Trump Tower in Moscow. I mean, it's ridiculous. And not only that, but who believes Michael Cohen anyway? I mean, really, you say he lied about going to Prague, but then you believe him about this, right? Which is it? Which is it, people? Which is it? So,
but Tracy, you brought up a great point just right there. This is a man of no integrity. He's a lawyer that was recording his clients.
I know.
You know, this is a man of no integrity that has been caught in a number of lies already between him and the whole Lanny Davis thing over the summer. I mean, this is a shifty, awful person. But it's just like what I said before. If the Russia thing goes away, they're going to look for the next thing. They don't care how bad of a person Michael Cohen is or how bad he's ruined his own life in the public eye the last couple of years. They just care that he might be able to say something that hurts Donald Trump.
Well, this is all it's about. I mean, like I said, it's the propaganda. Like, first of all, investigators in the middle of an investigation where if that was true and that was really something that that's really something they can get Trump on, do you really think that they would be leaking it to frickin' BuzzFeed? Really? I mean, give me a break. Like, why would you jeopardize your own investigation by putting it out into the public sphere that's what you're investigating?
Isn't it amazing how throughout this entire ordeal, there has been nothing significant that has come through official channels of intelligence? Everything has come through these hackneyed backwater newspapers, and they have been treated as if they came from official intelligence sources.
Yeah,
it's amazing. There's been no electronic communications. At every turn, we're getting information from anonymous sources and biased newspapers. And
case in point right here, Ted Lieu, pictured with all kinds of pedophiles and crazy criminals everywhere. Based on the BuzzFeed report and numerous other articles showing that Donald Trump committed obstruction of justice, articles. Committed obstruction of justice and other possible felonies, it's time for the House Judiciary Committee to start holding hearings to establish a record of whether the president committed high crimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can we arrest all these people, Frank, and get them the hell out of our damn country? You know they don't believe this shit. You know it.
No, they don't.
They're trying to take the country down.
No, they don't. This is the only business that they've ever known. You see, if Ted Lieu cared about Americanism in any kind of way, he wouldn't be in the business of government. I mean, government's not a business. Government is supposed to be something you go there to to do some kind of duty. I mean, some people want to join the military. Other people say, hey, how about I go try to run and represent my district in Congress for 2 years and just say, you know, do something and try to pass on and continue the tradition of self-governance and limited government and all that stuff so that people who actually have real ideas and real gumption for life and ambition can go out there and put a good idea to use and start a business and or maybe start a charity or foundation and maybe make an impact on things like homelessness and hunger and education shortfalls in certain communities around the country. Those are the people who are Americans out there. Ted Lieu is a gangster.
He's horrible. And just his Twitter bio, husband of Betty, the love of my life, father of two great kids.
Yeah, I want to fight you and Betty. Both of you.
His last freaking line is also, I don't take orders from Vladimir Putin.
Oh, well, zinger. There's a zinger right there. Good job, Ben. You really got us now. You freak.
Oh, God, help me.
I mean, these were the hallway monitors that nobody liked in high school. These are the people that used to get stuffed into lockers, and they now have some kind of this is their revenge. It's a revenge of the nerds. Ted Lieu.
He says, as a former prosecutor, I can tell you how a target responds to allegations is something we watch closely. God, this man was a prosecutor. How many innocent people went to jail because they didn't fit his political ideology?
Oh yeah, yeah. Ted Lieu is the type of guy you call up when you want to screw, a spouse out of custody for a child or something like that, and really put the screws to the little sisters of the poor or something like that. Ted Lieu is the guy that stands for he stands for what's right, I'm sure.
Speaking of little sisters of the poor, let's talk about something that came out last night to end this fiery ass show that we've got going on today. There's been a lawsuit going on, a Planned Parenthood deal. Have you seen anything about this?
I've seen a few things, yeah.
So,
Little Sisters are part of it, right?
What?
Little Sisters are part of it.
Good question. Let's see.
It might have been a ruling in a state. I saw them pop. Oh, either way, you go ahead. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
This is in the Fifth Circuit. It's in the Court of Appeals right now, and it goes back to that videotape of them talking about selling baby parts to the highest bidders. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Freaking disgusting. They said that video was deceptively edited to make it look like that's what they were doing. The ruling that came out from the Fifth Circuit yesterday, the court noted that the undercover Planned Parenthood videos underwent forensic review and were not deceptively edited. Another key detail, the court noted that Planned Parenthood executives had admitted to illegally altering abortion procedures and circumventing the federal partial birth abortion ban to obtain intact fetuses to sell for greater profit.
Yeah, everybody out there who goes and pats themselves on the back for wanting to exhume Confederate graves or tear down Confederate war monuments or, you know, climb flagpoles to rip down Confederate flags and so bravely 170 years later, or however long it's been now, almost two centuries, that you're so bravely fighting the ghosts of something that you never had to face. I can't wait to see what people think about these little social justice fanatics that have stood by and defended this kind of wholesale butchering.
This is
you want to talk about what history is going to say about past generations. This is slaughter.
It's genocide.
Slaughter.
It's horrible. I'm sick to my stomach even just thinking about it. Like. And they champion it. They champion the murder of innocent babies. Like and then you hear through Breitbart that Google is censoring all of the pro-life videos and only letting the pro-abortion videos go up to the top of search results.
Because it's progressive.
This is progressive. Killing your young is progressive for people now. This has been for a really long time. I don't understand how you could sit there and defend this. Like, what kind of a person are you if you sit there and defend this shit?
I don't know.
Wow. Wow. What a show.
Yes.
I'm mad. I'm angry. I'm fired up. I'm feisty.
I know. I have to go try to put together thoughts for a calm show for later on with me. I don't know the hell I'm going to do that.
Well, at least you got most of it out here.
Yeah, you know, that's right. Maybe just keep to the formula for Fridays. Get it all out at 11 a.m. and then just chill at 7 p.m. Maybe I'll pack a hookah tonight. It's been a while.
That's good. I like that. And guess what? One last thing before we go. Hey, Ted. Hey, Teddy boy. Justice is on its way. Because there is no way on God's green earth that evil like this can actually win. It doesn't happen. Nope. There's an equilibrium that needs to be maintained. You guys have had the upper hand for decades. It's our turn now. So pack it up and pack it in.
I always fear the pendulum swing. I wish that there was an equilibrium that could be struck. That's the only thing. But then again, if you look at the ebbs and flows of history, it is all one big pendulum. But it mostly comes at the fact that at a time when the Ted Lieus of the world do get exposed for the evil that they are, and a civilization finds its guts and its spirit and its morals again and its sense of direction and integrity again, it always gets those courageous people that are there to revitalize a civilization. It always gives way to a selfish generation that follows, that is just living off of the substantial gains that a stronger generation before does. And then eventually in the year 2022, there's going to be another Ted Lieu. There's going to be another Ted Lieu. You know, it might take a couple hundred years, might take maybe a couple of generations. Who knows? Maybe we can actually suppress this, or we can strike that equilibrium with the technology that we have. As long as communication remains free, it's going to be a lot harder for the powers that were to be able to bring in new controlled mechanisms for society. I think that's what's been the big thing, the difference between the past and the present, is that here you and I are. We don't have any bosses. We decided as individuals to do the show together, and we know that there is a sizable amount of people that watch or listen, and that is a huge point of demarcation. That's a huge watershed moment in our history, if that medium is able to remain free, because that medium is how we got so bad. What we're trying to untangle right now is because the narrative had been controlled wholesale for generations. And not only that, but also education. I was talking about this before, too. You think about abortion and such and I know it's a sensitive issue and people have to make hard choices as individuals. But what we're looking at right now is something that is wholesale, industrial, and even bragged about. This has gone into a new direction.
Yeah, this isn't, I got raped and I'm not in the position to have a baby. That's not what this is. This is people just using it as birth control and then an organization selling
healthcare, selling it as healthcare.
Not only selling it as healthcare, but selling the babies.
Yeah.
Selling the fetuses. It's just.
Hey, what about companies like Ambrosia? That now every couple of weeks I see more and more articles on this, that there's more, it's available in more cities.
Yeah, no, I just put that out last night.
With the elderly taking the blood of the young?
Yep.
This is all the same thing here. Everybody's so afraid of getting old and dying, and we actually don't even realize what the whole point of this all is that the perpetuation and the strengthening of a species, it's how well we take care of the young, and the young are so disposable right now, and it's just every time I look at Nancy Pelosi and her stuttering paralyzed face getting up in front of a camera over there with her clown makeup, her clown paint makeup up there, because she so desperately wants to give the illusion that she's young and vigorous and hip and ready to still lead a nation. Get the hell out. Just retire. Just go away. Just go away. Everything is just so messed up. But yeah, history has a chance of and has a tendency of equalizing all of that. I hope that it's that we're on the precipice of it now.
I think we are. You guys can tune in to the Dark Delight Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you next week.
Thank you all so much.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.